welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's golden years. I'm your host, Mark LeVonier. Get ready for adventure in this hour. Later on, Herbert Marshall stars as the man called X, but right now, adventure from the voyage of the Scarlet Queen. This episode heard on the Mutual Broadcasting System on December 3rd, 1947. The story, The Green Tourist and the Temple Bell.
The Catch Scarlet Queen, Philip Kearney, Master. Position 10 degrees 20 minutes north, 107 degrees 45 minutes east. Sky fair, wind fresh. Remarks: departed Barea after losing two passengers. Reason for loss: the Green Tourist and the Temple Bell. Barea swelters 10 degrees above the equator on the southern coast of the leg of land that holds French Indochina. An hour spent there is too long, but I've known unscheduled ships like the Scarlet Queen to lay there for months before a cargo materialized out of the dilapidated warehouses that fringe the muddy, unkempt harbor. But due to our connection with the China traders, we were there only 3 days before we started loading a cargo of supplies for our company's trading station in Port Moresby, New Guinea. And not 2 hours after the whine of our winches and the swing of our cargo boom started to tell the harbor that we'd be headed out soon, two Americans arrived to buy passage across the China Sea to British North Borneo.
Captain Kearney?
Yeah.
My name is Matthias, Captain. Edmund Matthias.
Oh, yeah. China Trader's office told us to expect you, sir.
This is my son, Stanley.
I'm glad to know you, Stan.
Thanks, Captain. Mighty happy to be aboard.
They were easy people to know. By nightfall, when we were loaded and only waiting for the dawn tide to sail, we were sharing our laughs and hopes with them, and had learned that theirs was a journey of leisure after years in Nevada spent dreaming about the wonders and glory of the Orient. I was in my cabin that evening making a final check of my bills of lading, and my chief mate Gallagher had taken Stan and his father up into town for a final drink. I'd got to the end of my list and was halfway into a fresh jumper when I heard feet hit the gangway and then the deck. Gallagher, what's the matter?
It's a kid, Stan. He didn't show up.
Take it easy. Show up where?
He took a powder on the way up. Said he'd meet us at a bar at 8.
Yeah, what's 10 now?
We just got word that he was wandering into the native section on the waterfront all by himself. His old man's going nuts.
Where is the old man?
Waiting for us in the bar. We'd better get back up there, Skipper. Berea's no place for a green kid like Stan.
Yeah, break out a couple of 45s, Red. We'll go look for him.
And so Mutual continues The Voyage of the Scarlet Queen, written by Gil Dowd and Bob Tallman, and starring Elliot Lewis. The Scarlet Queen, proudest ship to plow the seas, bound for uncharted adventure. Every week a complete entry in the log, and every week a league further in The Voyage of the Scarlet Queen.
Taken care of himself.
Captain Kearney, thank heaven you've come.
Yeah, I'll be all right now, Mr.
Oh, there are so many things that could have happened. He isn't used to things like this back in Nevada. He wouldn't be gone this long if something went wrong.
Well, we'll find him, Mr. Matthias.
The first thing you've got to do is stop your imagination.
I only wish it were imagination, but I know my son. He promised to meet us here over 2 hours ago, and he hasn't arrived yet. I know that nothing but an accident, or I know that nothing would detain Stan if he could help it. What shall I do, Captain? What shall I do?
Now, first try to calm down.
I'm sorry, but you must know how I feel.
Well, sure I do. Now, who told you that they'd seen Stan, and what kind of a line did they give you on
it? Oh, it was one of the natives that worked at the hotel. He said he'd seen Stan at the end of Vejrapuri, the street where the native bars are, and the gambling dens, and I don't know what else. He said Stan joined the crowd of men gathered in front of the Temple of the Apsarises. That was more than an hour before he was to meet us here.
What is this Temple of the Apsarises, do you know?
Well, it belongs to a cult, I believe, rather than a recognized religion. Beyond that, I know nothing. Captain, if I've allowed anything to happen to my son, I don't know what I'd say. I don't know what I'd do.
Okay, Mr. Mathias. Take him back to the ship, Red.
No, Captain Carney. I can't sit there and do nothing.
With that calamity approach of yours, you aren't doing any good here.
But, Captain...
Never mind. You got the obituary all written. If he does have to be in trouble, it doesn't have to be any worse than being stiff from too big a load of native grog. Now, go on with Red and stay aboard. I'll see you later.
Well, I was thinking that I ought to stick with you, Skipper. Two's better than one.
I'm not going alone, Red. I'm going up to the China Trader's office and check with Lin Tishen. He's been in Berea long enough to know every corner in it.
Oh, my visitor is you, Captain Carney.
I'm sorry to bother you at this time of night, Ling Tichin.
One time is like the other. There's no bother.
One of my passengers is missing. The young one, Stanley Mathias. Went to Bejraburi Street.
Could be happy on that street. But since he is accidental. Only briefly, I think.
Oh, well, I'm going down to look for him.
It would be my honor to go with you.
Oh, thanks, Ling. Oh, incidentally, he was seen by a native in front of the Temple of the Apsarises.
Then, Captain, it is my misfortune to tell you that your concern is well-founded. It is a place of evil, asking the benevolent forgiveness of my ancestors. We will go there that you may see.
Bejraburi was an uncomfortable, jumbled street, lined by crowded buildings hiding their interiors behind shattered windows and curtained doors. Mixed with the reek of its humanity was the stench of the harbor along which it stretched, and into which went its refuse, including some of the men who came there and were never seen again. It was an ugly street. So ugly that the beauty of the temple at the end of it was a shock. Orange flame flickered from two massive female statues. The Temple of the Apsarises gave the immediate impression of evil and yet beauty. The columns that supported the roof were more massive female figures. The carvings on the heavy doors that guarded the unseen interior carried out the same theme. And before this door, a woman danced. Behind her stood three more, swaying slowly back and forth, one of them chanting, the other two adding the music of native instruments. Ling Tichin and I stood for a while at the edge of a scattered crowd of silent, almost hypnotized native men. Then he pulled me back into the shadows.
You have been cursed, Captain, by viewing the Temple of Apsarises. It is the renewal in the form of a cult of an ancient legend that is told in the stone carvings on the temples of Prahan.
What's behind it? What does it mean?
The legend tells that the Apsarises were creatures of great beauty, half human, half deity, who were sent by gods to lead astray those mortals whose lives were without sin, and so prevent overcrowding in heaven.
Huh? This audience tonight doesn't seem so saintly. Or aren't the creatures so particular these days?
I know only this. Many strangers to Barrière have entered the temple and have not returned. But I have not before heard of an Occidental whose mind was ready to receive the message of the Apsarises. You wait here, Captain. I will find one of the watchers to speak with and perhaps learn more.
Chen joined the entranced crowd. I was left alone, listening to the monotonous chant, watching the monotonous gyrations of the dancer. The atmosphere was something between a dream and actuality. It didn't make sense, but there I was, faced by the ceremony. For a moment, it didn't seem too strange that young Stan Mathias might have been caught and drawn in by it. I didn't realize that Ling Tichin was back until he tapped me on the shoulder.
Captain?
Oh, what'd you find out?
He entered the temple. I ache with sadness to tell you.
How about the French officials? Would they help?
They are most cautious. To them, sorcery as well as religion retain their dignity. They do not interfere.
Yeah.
Captain Carney, I fear that any warning I might give you would be heard only by your ears.
Yeah, I'm afraid that's right. My mind is ready to receive the message of the Apsari Seas. Thanks for the warning anyway, Ling. Maybe 20 minutes after Ling Ti-Chen left that the chanting stopped. I moved up through the crowd to catch any cues that were thrown to the Chosen who were to be allowed entrance into the temple of Apsarises. The first move was easy. The massive door swung open on an interior dimly lit by more flickering flame. I followed the seven or eight natives who moved forward in response to the appeals and gestures of the women. Two of the natives were turned back after brief questioning that I didn't understand. When the hostesses saw me, I caught the quick glances that snapped between them. One of them stopped me just outside the door.
What you want?
I
want
to go in the temple.
You don't belong here. You go.
I belong here, all right. I don't want to go in.
You belong Faria?
No.
What do you want?
I want the other man like me. He came in before.
You don't
I
come.
Want to find him. I go in if I have to burn the temple down.
You don't belong here. You want come, you come. You no belong here.
The look she gave me was entirely different from the sultry looks the natives were getting. The big doors swung shut as we entered the narrow hallway. It was bathed in an orange glow from the flames, permeated by incense smoke that swirled up from the fire
urns.
From the fascinated expressions of the men, there must have been great promise in the words from the woman who spoke. We followed them eagerly across the hallway. The door was open, and silently we obeyed their gestures and entered the room beyond. The door clicked shut, but the women stayed outside. I didn't know whether the others heard it or not, but I did. A bar slid quietly across the door, locking us in. This room, too, was lighted by a pair of fire urns, but the odor here was different. Still incense, but mixed with it a thickly sweet smell that tingled a little in the nostrils. Made itself felt deeper in the throat. It was so subtle that I hardly noticed what was happening. It was almost pleasant. So that when I did realize, I couldn't make myself care enough to fight it. Or to worry about it. Or to worry about Stan Mathias. Or to even wish that I was someplace else. I lay down on the floor with my fellow dreamers. Staring at the ceiling. Smiling. Breathing deeply until I couldn't see the ceiling anymore. And then I floated away. Floated away. Even the hangover from it wasn't bad until I remembered what I'd come for and became aware of what was going on in the room. There was no longer any feminine promise about it. Two squat, powerful natives wearing razor-sharp creases in their sashes were in the room. They'd opened a trap door in the floor. Through it, I could hear water. They were herding the still weak natives through it and into a boat that waited below. When the last of them had been sent down, the trap slammed shut. The guards moved toward me.
You get up. You come.
Yeah, I'm ready to go.
Go. Door.
Where to? Where are we going?
You go. Princess Negor.
Who's Princess Negor?
She high priestess, his temple. She high Zaras. All right, you will. Very good.
The high priestess, Princess Negor, made a beautiful picture surrounded by the mysticism, the color, the scent of the temple of the Apsarises. She lounged languidly on a raised couch. Her costume was in the tradition of early Cedar Barry. Her face was beautiful, her mouth stained scarlet, her eyebrows penciled darkly. There was only one thing wrong with the picture. She wasn't native. Her coloring was Aryan fair, and she smiled at the surprise I was showing.
The Princess Negor bid you welcome.
Thanks.
The mortal seemed surprised at the appearance of the High Priestess, direct descendant of Bakan himself.
I'm getting over it.
I'm glad. You must have something to talk about since you entered the temple with the rest of my slaves.
Yeah, that's right. Family Matthias. I came after it.
You won't get him. Captain Carney, he's my own special slave.
Maybe if you get down off that throne, we can talk sense, huh?
And he's deeply in love with me. You'll see that yourself.
What's the deal, princess? You want money? You want me to pay ransom for him?
You insult me, Captain. My income is more than sufficient. I want him near me, and he's quite willing to remain.
This is a little thick after the rest of your act. I saw Stan at 6 this evening, and he was quite willing to be leaving this hole in the morning. Now, what do you want? Shall I make an offer?
I want nothing. This life is a lonely one. I saw Stanley on the streets one day. He's handsome and fair and young. I saw to it that I met him. He came to say goodbye tonight and tell me he was sailing with you. But he changed his mind. Now he's here. He will stay here.
And live this fake of yours? He's not crazy.
Call it fake if you like. Only you miss the fact that it's quite profitable. The 6 natives who came in with you will bring 40 francs apiece. My turnover each night is between 30 and 50. Huh. You look puzzled, Captain.
Yeah.
Labor in the interior, Captain. The ready market in the mines and the plantations and the gardens of the mandarins. Under the sedative you received, they all signed 3-year contracts.
I'll keep my mouth shut about what I think of that, Princess. All I want out of here is Stan. Prisons are tough on the equator. I don't think he'd do so well sharing that with you.
Captain, I don't want to argue with you. Why don't you talk to Stan?
Maybe you remember that's why I came.
I really don't know why I bother, except that I like to make righteous men like you swallow their words. I'll have him come in, but in case you have any rash ideas, please remember the guards.
I'll try to remember them, Princess. I'll try to. I was almost surprised to see him walk into the room, his husky body erect, his blonde hair neatly combed, his white suit unwrinkled. I don't know what I'd expected, marks of a struggle, I suppose. He crossed directly to her and stood in front of her.
Here's Captain Carney Stan. He's come to take you away from me. Do you want to go?
He turned slowly from her and faced me. His eyes looked at me, but still through me. The rest of his expression was normal, a half smile on his friendly mouth, but there was nothing I knew in his eyes or behind them.
Do you want to go?
No. I'm staying.
Well, Captain?
Stan, your father's waiting on the ship. We're going to leave for North Borneo in the morning.
No.
Captain Carney doesn't believe that we mean so much to one another.
Magor has been lonely here, and now I've found her, and I know I've been lonely, too.
I've heard enough. He's not making sense.
Tell me, Captain, what is sense? He's left your world and entered mine, so you don't think it's sense. He'll be happier here than he's ever been before.
Yeah, how long does he live in that condition? But you're a new high, Princess. You're the filthiest hunk of humanity I've ever met.
Captain, don't anger
me. We'll talk that over later. Right now, you're going to help me get out of here.
God!
Get out of the way, Stan!
No! Don't touch her!
I figured that if I had her in my arms as a shield, I could keep the blades of the guards away from you. But Stan, half crazed, half conscious, and still following her will, blocked me away from her. I tried to sidestep him just as the guards got to me. Sword hilts hit the back of my head and staggered me forward. 2 pairs of arms took me, pushing forward on my elbows and back on my wrists. The pain streaked to my shoulders and I stopped struggling.
Hold on, Bondino. I've warned the guards I want no blood here, but out of no kindness to you.
That's fine. I'd be ashamed to accept.
You realize, of course, Captain, that since you bothered to come here, you're a great menace to me and my temple. I'd be a foolish priestess to allow you to escape.
Yeah, but you're close to the end. There'll be a whole crew coming if I don't get back.
I've arranged for a boat that will arrive for you soon. So bear in mind the next time you fall asleep in your aromatic little chamber that the punishment for those that defile my temple is a watery one, and the offender well weighted.
You're still a new high, Princess.
And I still will be when you're resting at the bottom of the harbor. Bungo! Take
it! Come!
The only advantage over the last time the door closed on me was that at least I knew what was in the room with me and I knew where it came from. As soon as the guards were out of hearing, I knocked the fire irons off of their pedestals. I stomped the charcoal embers that burned under the drug, holding a handkerchief over my nose. The smoke didn't lessen any. The activity increased my breathing. I tried to smother them with my sweat-soaked jumper. That didn't work either.
But while I was near the floor, I learned that the fumes were heavy and stronger down there. I climbed up on the pedestals, groping in the darkness, staggering as the stuff took hold. I found fresher air up there and cleared my wandering mind with it. I tried the sloping ceiling for weakness, found none. Filling my lungs, I went to the floor again, groped for the trap door. It was solid and immovable. I found the heavy base of one of the urns, climbed back on the pedestals to hold out as long as I could. The clean air held for a while, but wondering when the strength of the fumes would climb to me made each breath I took an adventure. The relaxation set in. And my dreams were of a canted deck, swept by cool spray and clean, fresh air. And I shook my head to bring myself back, and shaking it, I wasn't sure whether the sound I heard was real or not. I gritted my teeth to stay with it and heard it again. A movement outside the door. I got to the floor by the time the bar rattled the first time. It staggered across the room by the time it slid free. Was waiting when the door opened and the first guard, a rag at his nose, walked slowly into the unexpected darkness. When he was in position, I crashed the heavy pedestal base down on his head. I grabbed him as he slumped. The other guard, blade held chest high, rushed. I lifted the body to take the front. I left him hanging there, stepped around him, and caught the other guard with my weapon before he could recover his stance. I barred the door on him. I went into the high priestess's chamber.
What is this? What's happened?
Come on, Stan. Step out of it. Let's go.
No, you can't. He's going to stay. Where are my guards?
Come on, Stan.
He's going to take you away from me. Stan, don't let him. Fight, Stan. Fight so you can stay with me.
Get away from her.
Get away from her.
Fight.
Get away from her. I thought he'd be a pushover in the dream he was living, but I was wrong. I couldn't hurt him. He didn't land many, but those he did were solid with power. I dropped his head as a target and shot for his throat. He was like dead flesh. He didn't feel anything, and my own weakness was coming back to me. I put one into his solar plexus that rocked him. I put another one in, and another one. Finally. Then I looked at the princess. She was gone. I unlocked the door that I barred on the guards. Then I went to the big fire urns in the entrance hall, tilted them so that the flames licked up the walls. Bent down, threw Stan over my shoulder, and left. I only stopped to look back once, down toward the other end of Bejrabori Street. Healthy flames were licking up through the roof of the temple of the Apsarises, and excited crowds were running toward it. Then I went back to the ship.
I hope we haven't delayed you too long, Captain. It's long after your planned dawn departure.
No. We have plenty of time, Mr. Mathias.
But I did want to see you. The doctor sent Stan up to a hospital in Saigon, and he was almost back to normal before he left. He says he hopes you understand, Captain.
If anybody does, I do. I got a whiff of that stuff myself.
He doesn't remember a minute of it.
No? Mm. Well, you tell him from me he's lucky. And that the French officials got his girl. She started life as plain Hortense Croft in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Quite a descent from that to High Priestess of Berea. Huh?
Yes, I'm...
Yeah, I'm sorry too, Mr. Yeah. That it happened and that you can't make the crossing with it.
Captain, one is so limited in Berea, but I'd like you to have this.
Hmm? Well, splashes. Sounds good. Thank you.
Of course, anything I'd say in thanks would be completely insufficient. Well, Captain, if you ever get to Nevada, we'll try in some way to repay you.
Well, thanks.
I'm in mining, you know, just outside Ely. And if you ever get sick of this life and want to settle down, just let me know. My hand on it, Captain. I promise you a position.
I'll keep that in mind, Mr. Matthias. Keep that in mind.
Fine.
Put the low coastline of French Indochina on our stern and started to trap the breeze that pushed its jungle smells to us.
To make sail!
long leg ahead of us to Port Moresby. And the crewmen, looking forward to the even flow of sea life, snap to their stations at Red's command.
Report, chief! Make sail!
The big mainsail uncurled in the morning sun, shook itself restlessly, and went taut as it bent into the wind. The jib snapped out. The mizzen swung into place. The lee rail settled down toward the churning water. And the Scarlet Queen took the bone in her teeth and fought the swells that rose up before her.
Ah, she's a great ship, Skipper. She likes her work.
Yeah, she'll do for me.
Yeah, well, what are you going to do with her in Nevada, Skipper? I hear they got a desert there.
Oh, well, that's when I get sick of this life, remember?
I don't know, Skipper. He's probably got a good soft desk job for you and a wealthy daughter for you to marry.
Well, is that bad? Then I could subscribe to Yachting Magazine.
No. No yachts in Nevada. But you could do your traveling in a deck chair on one of those big ocean liners.
Oh, stop it, Red. You're making me seasick. No, but he did hit one vital spot.
Yeah?
The bottle he gave us. Better try it, huh?
Yeah. He's got a heart.
And a sadder but wiser son.
But we got a ship. Here, Skipper. To the Queen.
To the Scarlet Queen. After you, mate. After you.
Log entry. The Catch Scarlet Queen. 5:30 p.m. Wind brisk. Sky fair. Mainsail and mizzen reefed. Ship secure for night. Signed, Philip Kearney, Master.
Mutual invites you to sail into further adventure on the voyage of the Scarlet Queen next week at the same time. Porto call, Rabaul, New Britain. The Scarlet Queen stars Elliot Lewis as Phil Kearney with Ed Max as Gallagher. And tonight featured Gloria Blondell as the Princess with John Daner and Ben Wright. Music scored and conducted by Richard Arant. The Scarlet Queen, produced by James Burton, is written by Gil Dowd and Bob Tallman.
The Voyage of the Scarlet Queen, on Tuned to Yesterday from December 3rd, 1947, on the Mutual Network. The co-author of that story, Gil Dowd, would work with other co-author Robert Tallman on many broadcasts of this series and served as a launching pad for their work together on the CBS show The Adventures of Sam Spade. Gil Dowd would go on to co-write with Paul Dudley on the other CBS show very popular at the time, Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. You're listening to An Hour of Adventure on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for The Man Called X with Herbert Marshall, going to India in this broadcast from April 7th, 1951 on NBC.
Herbert Marshall as The Man Called X. Wherever there is mystery, intrigue, romance, in all the strange and dangerous places of the world, there you will find The Man Called X. Kalachar winds its crooked, filthy way through the colorful heart of the jewel of India, the city of Bombay. Down toward the Arabian Sea, the street winds, finally coming to an abrupt end amidst the turmoil and confusion of Bombay's dock area. And it is there, among the English merchants, the Lascar sailors, the Hindu, Muslim, and Brahmin dock hands and stevedores, that we find a familiar fakir busily plying his wares.
But believe it things. Where were the father of my father of my father? Nowhere. Nowhere in all India could you find razor blades like these. They'll sharpen pencils, open tin cans. You could even use them for cutting your whiskers. Yeah, you could. Okay. Now you don't have to get tough about it, okay? Hey, you, Saeed. Maybe you'd like some pin-up pictures, huh? I got Mabel Norman, Cedar Barra, Mary Pickford. Believe me, for 10 rupees a piece. How wrong can you go? And besides,
no,
I would like...
Pardon, sir.
Huh?
May this humble one inquire if the noble sir is known by the name of Pagan Zelsmith?
Pagan? Who wants to know?
My name is Mahura Sholto, sir. It was in Karachi during the war with the Japanese that I was of some service to the great one known as X.
Oh, sure. Mahua Soto, yeah. Hey, maybe you'd like some brand new resharpened razor blades, eh?
You must be familiar with the address of the one who is known as X. Yes. X.
Hey. Hey, that's $50 American.
Use it to send a cablegram to X at once. Whatever is left, you may retain for yourself.
Oh, you bet, Mr. Sholto, my oldest, dearest friend. I'll send it off right away.
I will write the message for you here upon the slipper. In the back country of Kandiva, fertile seed for war is being sown upon soil ripened for conflict. You must destroy the deadly harvest.
Are you kidding? That don't even make sense.
To the man known as X, its meaning will be as clear as the waters of a crystal stream.
It will?
Go, Sab. Send the cable. He must arrive here before it is too late.
Mr. Sholto! Oh.
Make sense, Ken. Just because you get a cablegram filled with gibberish from Fagon, that's no reason for you to go running off to India.
Mahua Sholto has been murdered, Chief.
Sure, I know. And this is the Bureau, not a homicide division.
Chief, did you ever hear of Khan's grass?
Khan's grass?
Yeah.
Well, sure, it grows wild in India.
It's the curse of India. Only 5 feet high, virtually indestructible. Over 10 million acres of once fertile land in the central provinces are now overrun by it.
Well, that's their problem.
No, you're wrong, Chief. Unless that land can be reclaimed from the Khan's grasp, millions of people will face famine, starvation. And starving people are ripe for anything. Well, remember what happened to China.
Now, but wait a minute. Didn't I read about an English agriculturist, Dr. Stanley, planning on doing something about that grass with some new farm machinery or something?
That's right. He's in Bombay now, getting ready for a trip to the interior. He's going to try out that machinery in Kandiva province.
Kandiva?
Yeah.
In the back country of Kandiva, fertile seed for war is being sown.
I'll let you know how I make out, Chief.
I can't tell you how pleased I am to meet you in person, Mr. Thurston. Mahua Sholto spoke to me about you so often I felt that we'd almost become friends, and now I'm certain of it.
Nice of you to say so, Dr. Stanley. But I didn't know that Mahua was connected with your land reclamation project.
Oh, there was nothing he wouldn't do for the benefit of his people, Mr. Thurston. When he learned of the machines that I was building, he was willing to sacrifice anything to help me.
Is that why he was killed, Doctor?
Here is the building where I've been working. Will you please come into the office?
Thank you.
Mr. Thurston, for 5 years I've been trying to build tractor-driven equipment that will destroy the Khan's grass, that will tear it out by the roots. But there have been repeated attempts to sabotage my machines. I've received warnings that the farmer peasants in Kandiva province will not allow any foreign devils to interfere with their affairs. Mahua Sholto has been murdered.
Suspect anyone?
No one.
Where's the machinery now?
Oh, they're in the workshop in the rear of the building. We're moving it out to the siding this afternoon, and then tonight it'll be loaded aboard railroad cars and the trip to Kandiva.
Yeah. They came from your workshop.
There they are. No, Batman, Martin, fight him.
Let's have that gun.
Let's have it. Now, Jack, what's going on here? What is the meaning of this?
It's simple enough.
I just found out who's been trying to wreck our tractors.
I am afraid, Dr. Stanley, that your engineer is suffering from a misapprehension.
Yeah? But then what about that drum of diesel oil over there? Well sweetened with sugar and sand.
Sugar and sand? You're sure about that?
You bet I am. I just found it back here when Turbot opened up on me. I ran over, saw him with the gun, and... Say, who are you anyway?
My name's Ken Thurston.
He's an old friend of Mahuba Sholto's.
Huh?
Mr. Thurston, this is Jack Martin, my tractor engineer. Hmm? And this gentleman is Lal Turbot. He has been working for us at Delhi University.
What's your explanation, Turbot?
I was outside the workshop when I heard the shot. I rushed in, saw that gun on the floor, picked it up, and then Martin attacked me.
Do you expect anyone to believe that story, Turbot? Huh?
What do you mean, Martin?
It could be true. See for yourself. This gun hasn't been fired.
What? Oh, but that's impossible.
What difference does it make, Mr. Martin?
Bertie, I didn't hear you come in.
I have been here for several moments, Dr. Stanley, being amused by this rather childish conversation. You are Ken Thurston, are you not?
That's right.
I am Barry Sholto.
Sholto?
Mahuva Sholto's daughter, Mr. Thurston.
Oh, I'm glad to know you. But why do you think it makes no difference who fires those shots?
Because whether it is now or later, Mr. Thurston, you will learn that this project of yours is doomed to failure.
Oh?
India can handle her own problems. Her hopes, her future, lie within herself, with her own people, with Asia.
Those were hardly your father's sentiments, Miss Sholto.
And today he is dead. He would not listen to me, Mr. Thurston. I would advise you not to make the same mistake.
Well, of course, if you insist on having my invaluable services, Mr. X, I'll be happy to go along with you on this trip. For slight consideration, of course.
You'll get bureau scale pay, Gong. Plenty a day and expenses.
Please, Mr. X.
There's Dr. Stanley's train. As soon as they finish loading the tractors, we'll be pouring out for Kandiva province. You coming along?
At bureau scale?
That's right.
20 a day in expenses?
Yes.
Oh, I couldn't possibly consider it.
Okay, so long, Pedro.
Well, as long as you sit like that, Mr. Oh, thank you. How soon do we leave this Kandiva joint anyways, Mr. X?
Cheer up, Pedro. We shall get there sometime tomorrow.
Believe me, it won't be one hot box too soon. Boy, what a trip.
What did you find out about Lal Turbot or Jack Martin?
All Martin does is talk about tractor engines, and Turbot don't say nothing. Just keeps on making eyes at that Barry cookie. What gives, Mr. Thurston, what goes on with this trip anyway?
Somebody's trying to commit murder.
Murder? But who's trying to bump off who?
India is the target, Pedro.
India? Now, what kind of a talk is that? How can anybody murder a country?
Sabotage, Martin.
No question about it, Thurston. A 3-6 job with detonating caps. When the train ran over it, it blew. Lucky we were going slow.
Yeah.
But why should anyone try to blow up a whole train like that?
They were after the tractor equipment.
If so, Mr. Thurston, they did not succeed. It has not been damaged.
Good. We can send back to a wrecking crew and be on our way again by morning.
How much longer do you think you can go on, Mr. Thurston? The attempt at sabotage. My father's death. Now this. Must we all be killed before you will listen to reason?
Barry is right, Mr. Thurston. We cannot proceed in the face of the united resistance of the Indian people.
Your friend, Dr. Stanley, doesn't feel that way about it.
Doesn't he? Let us find him right now and put the question to him.
It will do no good, Lal. I have just been to his compartment.
And he wouldn't agree to turn back?
He could not agree to anything.
Killed by the wreck, Miss Sholto?
No, Mr. Thurston. By a knife in his throat.
With over 10 million acres of once fertile grain land overrun by the almost indestructible Cannes grass, the dark shadow of famine looms ominously over the great land of India. Dr. Roger Stanley believed he had tractor-operated equipment that could destroy it. But the train carrying the equipment was wrecked and Dr. Stanley murdered. Now, 2 days later, Ken Thurston has arrived with the reclamation party and the rerouted equipment at the home of Barry Sholto in Tandeepa Province.
I want you to understand, Mr. Thurston, that the hospitality of this home is being extended only because it was my father's wish. Not mine.
Apparently not clear enough, or you would not make sure that the subject
was your doing.
Yes, Miss Bolton. We're here to test up the standard equipment. If it works, it means new life for millions of your countrymen. The wishes of starving people are more important than yours and mine.
It is the wish of my people to be sufficient unto themselves. They want no interference from foreigners.
There's only your word for that.
And the dead bodies of my father and Dr. Stanley.
What makes you think they were killed as a protest?
What other explanation is there?
The fact that starving people will listen to promises from anywhere. Somebody will be trying to sell them on the idea of Asia for the Asiatics.
Have you anything better to offer?
Yeah, tools. So they can help themselves.
Murderers!
What? There's a mob outside, Thurston. They sort of put the equipment away in the barns, and they don't like any part of it.
Yeah, that's obvious.
Starting with the rocks, are they?
Put down that gun, Mountain.
If they want to play rough, they came to the right place.
Put it down.
Are you nuts, Thurston? There's only one way to handle a mob like that.
If there is, it's not with bullets.
What else do you think could work?
Maybe someone ought to talk to him.
Talk? That's crazy.
Lal Turbat doesn't think so.
Lal? What do you mean?
He's out there talking to them now.
Hey, that's right, Mr. Thurston. And look what's happening with those Lincolns.
The mob's breaking up. They're leaving. See what goes on here anyway. What could Turbat have told them that would quiet them down like that?
We'll find out in a minute. He's coming in here now.
My countrymen offer their apologies, Sahib. I think they will hold themselves in check for a while.
What did you tell them, Turbat?
I merely asked them to wait until after the test tomorrow before expressing their anger in violence.
You mean that's all you said? That was enough?
Why not? Fundamentally, they are reasonable people. They will listen to sensible talk.
Sort of makes them the exception to the rule, isn't it?
I am not certain I understand, Mr. Thurston.
Angry mobs usually don't listen to anything. Unless it's an order from their leader.
Look, Mr. X, let's take a quick rush out Padre away from here tonight before that mob changes its mind and kills somebody like me.
They're going to test that equipment tomorrow, Bagon, and tonight you're going to stand guard in the barn with those tractors.
Oh, no. No!
Share this hilltop with you, Ken. There are some things I would like to talk over with you.
What things, Barry?
First, my father was killed. Then Dr. Stanley. Any one of us could be next. And why? Because someone who thinks he is right is trying to prevent you from doing something you think is right. It somehow does not make much sense.
Maybe not, but this does. The world's too small these days for any country to stand alone and hope to survive.
Then every nation, every man must choose his side.
Yes. For your sake, I hope you choose the right one. For the world's sake, I hope India does.
I figure we can start right about here in the morning, Thurston. With a break, I should be able to clear 12 to 16 acres by night. That ought to give the natives something to think about.
Yeah. This stuff's mighty dry and brittle. You think that all you have to do is just burn the fields over?
Yeah, it's been tried.
I know. Nothing would touch it until Dr. Stanley built that equipment out there in the barn. Well, we'll find out in the morning if it'll do the job.
That's from the barn. What's going on there?
Let's go find out. Hit the side door, Martin.
Right.
Drop the head, thank you.
Turbat.
Oh, he's in is you, Martin, and Mr. Thurston.
What's going on here, Talbot?
I was in the hope that you gentlemen could supply such an answer.
You got the gun. What was the shooting about?
Again, I must plead ignorance. I was out for an evening stroll and heard the first shots from the barn. I ran in here, someone fired at me, and I returned the fire. Then whoever shot was gone.
That sounds as phony as the yarn you handed us back in Bombay.
The truth, Mr. Martin, very often has a strange sound to those who are not used to it.
One more crack like that, and I'll take that gun away from you.
Hold it, Martin. You've got other things to think about.
If you are concerned about the equipment, Mr. Thurston, you need not be. Everything is in good order.
It's not what's here that bothers me. It's what's missing.
Missing?
Yes. 5 drums of diesel oil and Pagan Zilsmith.
Of the equipment anyway, Ken.
Why not, Marie?
I should think the affair of last night might have some effect on your plans. Your friend, Pagan, is still missing. Does that not mean anything to you?
If they wanted to kill him, they'd have done it last night. My guess is that they're holding him until they see how the press comes out.
All set to go, Thurston.
Okay, Martin. Good luck.
I don't think we'll need it, but keep your fingers crossed. Here we go.
Under the canned glass surface. And look, it is working. Look at this glass, he is cutting it off the glass. It is unbelievable.
So, you can supply India with the tools she needs to help herself.
Inside of a year, Barry, you'll see this picture repeated all over India.
If my people can be convinced of that fact, Mr. Thurston, there still remains a problem.
You! Mr. Thurston!
I can!
It is Zilsmith.
Mr. Thurston, Mr. Thurston, we've got to get out of here. Fast, we've got to get out of
here. What's up, Pagan?
Oh, those crooks last night, the one who shot me and kidnapped me. I just got away from them. And we've got to get out of this grass quick or we'll be cooked like a couple of goose.
What are you talking about?
The fuel oil, that's what. They got it spread all over the grass over there.
But why should they spread oil in the grass?
There's your answer now, Barry. Look over there.
The Khan's grass is on fire. That wind is carrying it this way.
Come on, Mr. Rex, let's get out of here before we're toast.
Okay, Pagan, climb aboard this machine.
I'm right ahead of you.
Do not be a fool, Thurston. You cannot hope to save the equipment. Those tractors cannot outrun the flames.
You and Barry run for the house. Martin is out of the path by now. I'll handle this end of it.
But that is insane. You do not stand a chance.
All right, Pagan, hang on.
What? Am I ever glad to be getting out of this mess? I'd only want to see another blade of grass as long as any. Hey, look what you're doing, Mr. Rex. You're heading right into that fire.
Not quite. I'm running parallel with it.
But Mr. Rex...
There's an extra oil drum on the back. Take a look and see what's happening to it.
Yes, but...
Do as I say, you idiot.
Okay, okay. Hey, what do you know? All the oil's running out of onto the grass.
Good.
It's good, eh? Now, let's get out of here.
Not until we set a backfire.
A backfire?
Yeah. Here. Hang on to this piece of cotton waste. That's it.
Hey, what's what you're doing? It's on fire.
Toss it into the oil. We'll spill out. Go on, toss it.
Sure, but... Oh, I don't see why you... Mr. Earth, it's on fire all around us. We're burning up.
All right, now relax, Pagan. The only thing that will burn around here now is the town's grass. As soon as those two fires meet, they're going to call it quick.
Congratulations, Thurston. That was the fastest bit of rain work I've seen in many a day.
Oh, it was nothing. Nothing at all.
The fire put out. All that equipment saved. You call that nothing?
The backfire worked. Let's leave it at that.
Okay. Have it your way. All I can say is that I couldn't have pulled it off.
To be perfectly frank, Thurston, I'm still puzzled about it. Or was it just accident that the second tractor was so handy and had the open fuel drum on it?
It was no accident, Turbot. There had to be some logical reason for those missing fuel drums. A fire would destroy the equipment and still give Martin a good cover-up.
What was that, Thurston?
You can forget the act, Martin. It didn't work in Bombay when you tried to throw suspicion on Turbot, and it won't work now.
Are you trying to be funny, sir?
There's nothing funny about the murders of Salter and Dr. Stanley. Or the attempted murder of millions of Indians through starvation.
What are you talking about?
How do you know there was sand and sugar in that sealed oil drum in Bombay unless you put it there yourself? And the explosive that wrecked the train, how do you know it was three sticks and a cap unless you ordered it that way?
You seem to have made a little slip yourself, Thurston. You've forgotten to get any proof for all those wild statements.
Oh, now Turbot can supply plenty of that.
Turbot?
Yes, Mr. Martin. Last night I spoke with many of my people. Not all of them were deceived by your propaganda. They promised if we could prove that the Kansgrass could be conquered, they would tell us the name of the one who was inciting them to unrest and violence. No, I would not advise you to move, Mr. Martin.
Well, guess we cleaned this up okay, eh, Mr. X?
We haven't cleaned up anything yet.
Huh? We haven't?
No, Pigo. Not as long as Martin and those like him are still around. Trying to sow the seeds of war. Feeding starving people on false ideas instead of bread. No, we haven't cleaned up anything yet.
The Man Called X, on Tuned to Yesterday, an April 7th, 1951 broadcast from NBC. And that wraps up this hour of adventure on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levenier. Thanks for listening.